And now the subject is the same. Now we have a more mathematical part, and we have Isabel Darcy telling us about mathematical interpretation of this, different, well, what we see here, tangle analysis of protein DNA complexes. Thank you, Isabel.
Thank you. So I'll start off with basically a review of a type of experiment that I'm hoping is quite useful for probing a lot of protein DNA structures via that chromatin, via that transposasomes, or anything else. I'll be talking about this mathematical model of protein DNA complexes. We all know that proteins have nice, interesting pictures, but as a mathematician, I'm allowed to simplify things. So this is actually DeWitt's doing. He simplified this into a nice three-dimensional ball, so our proteins are just balls. And I've seen this model in biology papers, so it's a valid model. The DNA, I have two slides that actually have to do with sequence, but the majority of my DNA you can think of as just rubber tubing or strings. So in this, and you can see it is a valid model because here's a picture of a protein bound to DNA, and you can see proteins are just balls. So again, this was the Ernst and Sumner's model from the late 1980s, where the protein is the ball, the DNA is strings, and our entire goal is to find out the shape of the DNA bound by the protein. So we want to know how to draw the DNA that's bound by the protein. So that's the goal. Hence, we solve equations, and our equations are picture equations. So we want to know how to draw the DNA inside this protein ball. Again, as a math biologist, I can, you know, simplify things. We really think of the DNA as wrapping around the outside of the protein, but for convenience, we push it inside the ball. So all my DNA is drawn inside the ball as opposed to wrapped around. But once you have the solution, you can then push it to the boundary and get a more biologically relevant model. So our simplification is we want to know how to draw the DNA inside the ball, what are solutions. This is an actual equation from a cell paper out of the Jayram and Harshi labs. What's the shape of DNA? Well, you can see this is the solution that they found. So this is an actually biologically relevant solution that when you plug it into this equation here, we can see we do get out the four-crossing catenated product right here. Versus if I try to plug this thing in right here, I don't get a four-crossing product, so this is not a solution. One other thing to notice from this one single equation is we already actually have a lot of information. What's the minimum number of crossings that the protein has to bind to get this four-crossing linked product? We're going to have an interesting topology. So this protein has to bind at least four crossings in order to get out this four-crossing product. So we know that the answer will be topologically interesting, at least. In order to probe the protein, so this experimental technique that I'll be discussing soon will apply to any protein that will just stably bind DNA. But to apply knot theory to it, we do have to produce knots. So we're going to be using these recombinases, either directly repeated to produce links or inversely repeated sites to produce knots, and that's what we'll use to probe it. But again, my proteins are balls, so my recombinase, which is going to be creating these knots, that they're going to be my pink proteins. I have colorful proteins, pink proteins. The proteins used in the experiments were, my pink doesn't show up very well here. It's a good thing I included. So I made the ball transparent because we know what the ball actually does. It does this recombinase. It binds into the antiparallel. And so on my slides, I can see this pink ball. Unfortunately, it's a little bit too transparent for you, but so you'll just have to imagine a pink ball around this thing here. Our focus is mostly going to be direct repeats because mathematically direct repeats is a lot easier. But many of the results also apply to inverted repeats as well. So I'll distinguish when a result applies only to direct repeats. So this is the experiment. And oh good, my pink ball shows up here. The difference topology experiment is mostly done in the test tube. Maybe some people will try to do it in vivo, but the one I'm familiar with has been done in the test tube. So you take your test tube, add your DNA, which contains binding sites for both your blue protein and your pink protein. My blue protein here is actually mu transposase, and the pink is Cre. We want to study the mu. So the one that we're interested in is the blue protein, the mu one, and the pink one is just to create the DNA knot. So this is the tool. This is the one that we want to study. So in the test tube, we take our DNA that has binding sites for all our proteins. We then add the blue protein, the mu transposase that we are interested in studying. It binds the DNA in some interesting conformation. We then add the recombinase, the pink protein, to it, and it creates the DNA knots. And it's called difference topology because if I add the blue protein first, these five crossings are trapped. The Cre recombinase will then change the topology, trapping four out of the five crossings, and you get this four-crossing link. Versus if I do a similar experiment, but I leave out this protein here so that these five crossings aren't trapped, you get a different topology. Basically, depending upon the reaction conditions, you'll get just unlinks for direct repeats or just unknots. And so you've got a difference in your topology for your products, whether or not you have this this blue protein right here. So we can use that difference in products to go ahead and figure out the shape bound by the mu transposase. This is basically to show you that difference topology experiments are very useful because this is before tangle analysis and this is after tangle analysis. And you can see that there's a big difference, so therefore math is good. The math and the experiments were all done by Jayram and Harshi and their graduate students. The original paper was Selja Panthania, and then they sacrificed even more graduate students to topology, so that was good. But they did get quite a bit of information from this doing their own mathematical analysis as well as the experiments. So there's many things you can probe with the difference topology. One thing they wondered about was, we've got the mu binds to these three different sites. Which sites does it bind to first? Is there an order to it? And they found out that it does bind to E and R first. Because in their difference topology experiments, if they just had your L and E sites, for example, you didn't get any difference in your, you know, you got the same products whether you had the mu or without the mu if you only had the L and the E sites. But if you had just the E and the R sites, you would get a difference in your products. And so they found out that it did bind. So they found this intermediate that it bound to E and R first. You can also notice that there's a slight difference between the topology of this figure and the topology of this figure. In here, we don't actually know which sites are likely to be close together. Now, being a topologist, I'm only telling you the topology if there are any sharp kinks. You know, we're not going to. I have two slides on geometry, but for the most part, it's topology. So if there's a kink or something, we're not going to set, you know, be able to detect that topologically speaking. But still, noticing that this is the topological conformation does say that these two DNA sequences are likely to be close to each other, and hence may very well interact in the experiment. So you know somewhat where the DNA sequences are likely to be. In three dimensions relative to each other, which also gives you information. They also used to believe that during the reaction, this enhancer sequence did not remain bound throughout the reaction, and they proved that, in fact, it does remain bound throughout the reaction. So this difference topology can give you reaction intermediates, what sites are likely to be close to each other, what sequences are bound throughout, so it can give you some useful information. So again, here is the experiment where we're interested in figuring out this shape right here, and this is doing the knotting. But there are a lot of experiments that need to be done. They put the Cre on these two loops right here, but you'll notice that there's three loops, which means there's three different pairs of loops one can choose. And so we've got these experiments right here where they put the Cre binding sites on these two loops and got this four-crossing product here. Or they can put it on these two loops and get this three-crossing product, or on these two loops and get this three-crossing product. Oh, and in reality, remember we've got inversion versus direct repeats, so inversely versus directly repeated sites. So depending upon if they're directly repeated sites, we can get a link versus a knot, or a knot versus a link. And basically, in order to get the site orientation, possibly one extra crossing that was not bound by the protein. So a crossing not bound by the protein may be necessary to get the correct anti-parallel local orientation for either the direct inverted repeats or the direct repeats. And you'll notice there's a difference of between direct repeats and inverted repeats. There's exactly one crossing change on this pair of loops. Same thing on the other pair of loops. It's exactly one, you know, three versus four crossings. And so the extra crossing was assumed to go with the higher crossing product. And so that gave us these equations right here. If you do have questions, feel free to interrupt at any time. So, but this is the main thing with respect to the talk. And here's proof that, yes, they did actually get those products. This, by the way, makes mathematicians very happy. I think all my colleagues back at Iowa are jealous of me, because when they have equations, they have, you know, at least five variables, and, you know, maybe only four equations. Some of them have thousands of variables. Look at how many variables I have. Just the one variable. We just want to find t, and look at all these beautiful equations. So we can solve them. The biologists solved them first. They assumed that the DNA was branched supercoiled, so you basically have three branches, and then they just needed to know the number of supercoilings along each branch. But they wondered, were there other solutions if they didn't make that assumption? So they knocked on mathematicians' doors, or emailed us, actually. And Jean-Luc, he found a solution fairly quickly. Yeah, that's biologically relevant, right? Yeah. So we could find solutions. The question is, could we find biologically relevant solutions? There actually are, despite the one unknown and all these equations, there's actually an infinite number of mathematically possible solutions. The question is, how many biologically possible solutions? And so in collaboration with John and Mariel, we proved that this is the only biologically relevant solution. So if the thing has nice properties, or if it has fewer than nine crossings, this is the only solution. So the only other mathematically possible solution would have, you know, nine or more crossings. If there's a five-crossing solution, this has got to be it. So this all this work generalizes as long as you get these 2P torus link products. So if you have a difference topology experiment that, you know, you want to know how three crossings interact with each other, we can still apply this mathematics and give you that solution. Because I plan to run out of time before I run out of slides, I'm including the acknowledgments throughout my talk. And this also will help you distinguish between what's been published and what has not been published yet. So this is work by a former graduate student of mine who's now in South Korea and just got her first research grant. She extended the stuff to four strings. So maybe you want to know how four segments of DNA interact with each other. And even if your protein DNA complex contains 10 segments of DNA, well, we can see how any four, you know, choose four of those, and we can say how four of them interact with each other. We do need to have these torus link products. So it has to, you know, basically be just these vertical twists closed up like that. And the mathematics does require that either they be torus links, that's what the P sub I's even mean, or if it's the unknot, if the product is the unknot or the trefoil knot, the mathematics applies as well. But the mathematics actually does not apply to the five-crossing torus knot. Then you could actually potentially get other solutions. But if it's that, then the solution is simple, and I will have to describe that. But first, I should mention that, you know, if you're interested in doing these experiments, you know, feel free to talk to me, because first off, I'd love to see the results. But I should mention that, and I will mention a few caveats throughout. One of them is, one of the things that was difficult about doing the experiments that Fanfania, Jayaram, and Harshi originally did, is they had to determine where to place the sites. Because if you place the sites far, for the Cree sites, if you place them far apart, you are going to be trapping supercoils. Although I drew this with no supercoils, many proteins require supercoils for it to actually be biologically relevant. And so if you don't have the sites properly placed, you will trap extra supercoils. I forgot to mention that when, so you'll have to go back in your memory for the gels, but they were beautiful gels where they got almost a unique product. And so they really were not trapping extra supercoilings in this sort of thing. But potentially extra supercoilings could be trapped, but the math is the same. The other thing is sometimes they do work on NIC substrates, and that was another thing that they were able to explore, is how the supercoiling actually affected. So they did do experiments where, in one case, they put the enhancer sequence on a linear DNA, and everything worked perfectly fine. So on a linear DNA with the enhancer, the other two sequences were on supercoiled DNA. That experiment worked biologically the same. They also did NICT, and they lost a crossing. So with a NICT substrate, they lost a crossing. And so, you know, the geometry of the substrate does have an effect. So what do I mean by the solution is R standard? For the four-string tangle case, the sort of things that you might expect is, again, a branched supercoiled structure. So you might have this branched supercoiled structure. It could be from four branches, or maybe you've got, you know, a three-branched here and a three-branched here, so you have some supercoils in between. And so these are the potential solutions where you've got these supercoils all along here with these two branches. Those are definitely solutions, and, you know, we can find all those solutions. Jay could find all those solutions too. But there are other potential solutions as well. I can go ahead and take this sort of conformation and sort of represent it by this graph where this just represents that I've got N2 supercoils here, N1 supercoils, etc. We could then twist those ends. And so this would be the supercoils that are trapped, but they are also twisted, and that actually is a solution. So for the four-string things, there's many more mathematically somewhat simple solutions. These actually, even though they look complicated, they are solutions where you could push the DNA to the boundary of a spherical protein, and they would not cross themselves along the boundary. But there are solutions. And if we went to five strings, there'd be even more solutions. So some examples, again, where these sorts of things here. This one, while it might look complicated, again, my caveat is, remember, all my solutions are topological, and if you've noticed, I've drawn them all in 2D. That means I take my protein, I throw it on the floor, and then I stomp on it. I flatten it out, and I put the endpoints on a plane. If you think about this, maybe in a more tetrahedral conformation, you know, pull this thing out to the front. And so this actually could be a biologically relevant conformation, even if it looks complicated. It's just a bad projection of it, if you think about it more in 3D. If this is a solution right here, then so is this one right here, where you take these three ends and add a few more twists to them in this sort of conformation, where if I do my sign so that they all cancel out, if the sum of these crossings is zero and the sum of these is zero, so here I've got two, but this is a minus two crossings over here. That would also be a solution. So there's many, many solutions. Okay. So, wrong direction. There. If, so all of these, remember the mathematics required that we have two p-torus link products, or the trefoil knot as your product. Well, what if you do these experiments and you actually don't get a 2P torus link product? And, well, when Jay originally asked us to look at this problem, I noticed I didn't point out the publication dates. There was a bit of a lag between, it took us years to figure out the mathematics for the three-string tangle case. So if you come and say, I got this five-crossing twist knot product, we'll say, great, because that gives us more mathematics to work on. We'll get back to you within 10 years. I'm sure we'll get back to you within 10 years. If you don't want to wait those 10 years, we have computational methods that can solve it as well. so the computational stuff came out quicker. We can go ahead and solve it computationally. The mathematics is nice because then you can, you know, propose experiments and we can, you know, very quickly say, oh, this would be what we'd expect here, this would be what we would expect here. Versus computationally, if you want to say, you know, I think we might get these products, I'll get back to you in 2 days after I run the program. And then, you know, so you can't quite easily, you know, throw out a lot of different scenarios. But at least we can still analyze the results within a couple of days. We also do have, so far the program's only been run for binding to 3 or 2 segments of DNA, but we can modify it to bind to any number of segments of DNA. The 2-segment DNA, it has many different applications. So we have tabulated this. The 13 crossing data does take 2 days on a very cheap PC. And this is before we've done anything to make the program run fast. So there's a lot of things that we can do to make the program run much faster, so we can go higher than that for 13 crossings. The more segments you add in, though, the longer it does take. This, by the way, was joint work with undergraduates, a former undergraduate, another former undergraduate, and a current undergraduate for generating these tangles. Said I would say a little bit about DNA geometry. So again, all our solutions are flattened. We don't know if there are any twists because topologically this is identical to this over here. We can't say the same. We can only say whether, you know, if we are fixing the endpoints, so this is different than these two things here because those endpoints are fixed, but I can add in these little things topologically, it's the same. So we'd like to be able to say something about geometry too. Well, once we have the topological solutions, we basically take the statistics that's been provided by Wilma Olson's lab to go ahead and minimize but preserve the topology. So for those who are familiar with the 3DNA, we do something very similar to the 3DNA. The only difference is we make sure we have we don't change the topology. When it's binding to 0 crossings, that's fairly easy, but when we model mu with the 5 crossings, or TN3 resolvase with 3 crossings, we just need to make sure that we don't change the topology. This is in collaboration with my graduate student, Mary Therese Padberg, and Rob, Stefan, and Steve are helping us with the inside as well, and they are also working on the outside DNA loops as well, so we'll have a nice confirmation. And if anyone has embarrassing photos of my colleagues that I can include in future slides, let me know. well, we do have, we haven't generated, we've generated nice pictures, but I haven't created any nice things for the slides. This is the not plot version. There are nicer pictures, but I'm afraid I just did this like a couple days ago. So I just did a quick version of, in reality, we're working in a sphere, but as a topologist, I can't tell the difference between a sphere and, you know, this box right there. But actually, we will allow for different shapes. So if you want something more ellipsoid, one can, you know, make your protein to be ellipsoid. Right now, we don't have that option, but we will. But the other thing is, we do what these spheres here represent is this endpoint can move anywhere within the sphere, and you can set the sphere radius. And we'll have other options where instead we'll divide it by planes and do other sorts of things. So we can really get 3-dimensional, you know, geometries that are not flattened. So that's. So back to topology. I wanted to talk a little bit about another difference topology experiment that was out of Rybnikov's lab. Originally, they did another one, but this is the figure I wanted first for modeling condensants. Instead of using a recombinase, they used a topoisomerase. The nice thing about a recombinase is it's site-specific, so you can decide exactly where the recombinase is going to act. The bad thing about a recombinase is that it's site-specific. You have to create all the substrates. And depending upon the number of loops, you need to put it on every pair of loops outside. There's a number of experiments. Topoisomerase, not site-specific. You just throw in. I mean, if you're studying this protein, you already have, you know, DNA that, you know, sequence, you know, DNA that will bind this one. For the condensins, it's not site-specific, so it will also bind anywhere. So you just take your DNA, throw it in the test tube, throw in your proteins, throw in your topoisomerase, and you're done. The biologist might disagree slightly with me on this. I've done the experiment, so I disagree with me on that too. But it's a lot easier than the recombinase. You know, there's actually a hope you could actually do it in a day. There's also a likelihood it might take you a lot longer. But so with the topoisomerase, it's a much quicker experiment for the difference topology, but one can do difference topology on that as well. For the mathematics, we're going to talk a little bit about signs. We can have a plus, so if we orient the entire, so this would be orienting the entire DNA, not just sites, so this would have to go and connect either to this end or to that end. We're not allowing things to connect up here. This is the orientation of the entire DNA. And if it's a, if I use my right hand to get my fingers underneath, it's a right-handed crossing, or if you rotate this thing counterclockwise, the above arrow to the lower arrow, then it's right-handed, otherwise it's left-handed. So we can distinguish between plus and minus crossings. This oriented skein triple, I could be speaking in Dorothy's other conference, so the math conference. In fact, I bet that, have you seen this already in your math conference, probably? You know, I bet this has occurred. You know, this sort of picture has been in some of those slides, quite possibly. So it's a very common thing in mathematics to look at this oriented skein triple. It's used to calculate the Alexander polynomial, not floor homology. It's a very popular thing to see. But when we see it, what do we see? Well, I see topoisomerase action. So a crossing changes just topoisomerase action. Well, I see recombinase action. Some of you are saying, I don't see Cre recombinase because Cre binds to antiparallel sites. It's not this non-planar crossing type thing. But being a topologist, I'm allowed to deform things. And if you just think about it, you might, so in this sort of thing, I might have this type of crossing right here. But if you rotate, you can get that antiparallel, you know, thing, and then you can just change it a little bit in topology. We can change things a little bit. So in a different projection, this would be recombinase. If you prefer, you can actually see something similar in this kind of projection where I just went ahead and moved these things together and then changed this from here to there, and that way I was allowed to do my Cre recombinase going from the antiparallel, changing the connections to over here. So we can do that by smoothing this crossing. So although I am thinking about the recombination action like this, we can always change our solutions so that it looks like the way the biologists expect it to look. So this is my skein triple, recombinase action, and topoisomerase action. I'm not expecting to cover that. I was actually expecting to show it, but I'm not expecting to cover this slide. We have some math notation. Just note that a tangle is rational if we can unwind it to get to here. That means I could push these strands to live on the boundary of the ball. If they live on the boundary of the ball, and then I do all the twistings, they're not going to cross themselves. So rational tangles have lots of applications, and they have a notation associated with them. You can close them up to get rational knots and links. And basically in experiments, I would be highly surprised to get a difference topology experiment that did not give me a rational knot. So it'd be very surprising to have that. But there is this mathematics. We're going to ignore it all. This was joint work with my graduate student, Candace Price, who just graduated and is now at West Point. Basically, ignore all the equations and let me tell you what it means. What it says is if we know the products from difference topology from a topoisomerase reaction, we can predict what the products would be for both direct repeats and inverted repeats or recombinase. So if you wanted to know, you might be wondering, I want to do this difference topology experiment, but I don't even know if I'm going to get any results. Instead of constructing all the constructs first, get a little bit of topoisomerase, check to see if you get a difference first, and then depending upon what the product is in your topoisomerase, you can predict what you're going to get from doing direct repeats and what you're going to get from inverted repeats. And similarly, if you know the direct repeats and inverted repeats, you can predict the recombinase things. And this says the same thing, except for we don't know whether topoisomerase goes from plus to minus or minus to plus. Again, there are a few mathematical caveats that I'd like to leave out, but I guess I should mention them anyway. One of the things is that we are assuming that the proteins are acting in the same general location. They don't have to act in the exact same location. They just need to be somewhat nearby, but not trapping extra crossings. One can still do the modeling, but the results would be a bit different in that case if you were to assume. It would be much more complicated math. It's not that the mathematics would be complicated. It's that my answer would be we could get, you know, here I'm saying we get this or this. If we allow for more things, I'd be saying we could get this, this, that, or the other thing, or this or that, you know, and I'd give you a much longer list, and that would not be quite as useful. So we're assuming the proteins act in the same general location. So there will be a number of caveats, but at least we can say this is what would likely be occur, but these are the alternatives. So it's not a perfect sort of biology thing, but we can say a few things. Okay. So this is the original difference topology experiment done with the topoisomerase out of the, who else's lab? Coserelli. And the products that they got were basically right-handed trefoil knots plus a 5-crossing torus knot and a 6-crossing granny knot. And this was, again, with topoisomerase. Well, mathematically, we can prove that we can ignore these two products. And the reason we can ignore these two products is because topoisomerase would have had to act twice. To get to go from the unknot to these things right here, topoisomerase would have had to act twice. So we only want to look at the first round of action. And so thus, I can restrict to these things right here. So that means in my topoisomerase, all of you are probably expecting with topoisomerase to trap supercoils and to get multiple products. Well, they used Nick, their substrate was Nick DNA. But even with Nick DNA, you know, there still could have been a lot of different products. But they got pretty much only in terms of one round of recombination. They did see one or two 4-crossing knots, but you know, it was mostly positive trefoil knots. And so we can basically assume in our difference topology that these are the products right here. Since we actually can solve difference topology experiments using a topoisomerase, Soo Jung Kim, my former student, knows exactly how to do that using topoisomerase. But I wanted to put in more of Candace's work as well. So we're going to go first through the, since we know what the topoisomerase product is, what would the recombinase experimental product be? So if this is the topoisomerase experiment product, then we know that the hop length is the recombinase experimental product. So do you really even need to do the recombinase experimental product? That I leave somewhat up to the biologist, but I'll, of course, give my opinions. In some ways, I'd say no, because you know you're going to get off the hop length. In other cases, I would say yes, because I've kind of been assuming that topoisomerase has been acting on every pair of loops. Remember my difference topology equations? I was assuming every pair of loops was giving me a product. And because they only saw the plus trefoil, I'm assuming all my products are the plus trefoil. But in reality, how do you tell for a topoisomerase reaction, how do you distinguish if some of your products are the unknot? For the unknot for topoisomerase, on Nick DNA, it looks identical to your substrate. So we don't know if maybe in some cases I really should be doing the equation going from to the unknot, sometimes going to the trefoil knot. We don't know if maybe this protein binding is not completely uniform. So maybe sometimes you get the unknot and sometimes you get the trefoil knot. So if you want to explore the topology a little bit more, and in particular if you want to explore the geometry, with respect to this sort of going back to the flattened 2D model, you know, we said that mu trapped 5 DNA crossings. Well, maybe it doesn't really trap 5 DNA crossings. Maybe it's just in terms of the exit angle, and maybe the exit angle is more like this. And so it might not be that the geometry is really different that gives you unknot sometimes and trefoil knots other times. Maybe it's simply that the exit angle is like this, and sometimes you trap over like this, and sometimes you trap over like that. So it depends upon, there might be some possibilities that with the same geometry, you might be likely to get two different topological products. Or maybe there's two different geometries. We really can't tell that from the topoisomerase experiment. And then the question would be, for the recombinase experiment, how satisfied would you be with if you put it on certain loops and you get the trefoil knot out product? Well, that's great because that's a difference topology. You get something different than if you had just put in your substrate without any of the condensin. And then you do other experiments where on your loops, you put your Cre binding sites again, and you only get unknots, which is the same thing as if you didn't even have condensin. Would you be happy with that result where you only got unknots? I say it's not worth doing the experiment because your reviewer would say, well, how do you know it? The loops just didn't come together. So that's... So we've got... whether we go from, let's skip that for lack of time. So we can do the four-string tangle analysis, and with the four-string tangle analysis, we get the biologist's answer again. We keep doing that. The biologists keep beating us to the punchline and giving the correct answers. We do find other potential products at potential solutions as well, but again, I kind of like this one over this one. But maybe there might be some ones that, if we simplified it a little bit, might simplify to something that's biologically relevant. We'll run the energies to find out about that. For the muck, for 13S condensin, it really was just plus trefoils. For muck B, there was a fair amount of four crossing knots. And so there could be another solution if you have four crossings. Or one could just get the four crossing by, instead of looping with this one going over and this one under, just loop the other way with this one going over and this one under. And so this is an example where you could have the same geometry, but slightly different. Topoisomerase might just change the crossing going over here, and you get two different topological products. So for time's sake, I will end here. Thank you.
Time for one or two questions. Yes, Ken?
So, Isabel, in looking at all of your diagrams of what goes into the action, they all seem to look very rational to me, except for one slide where I could swear I saw some possible options which were not sort of rational constructions. It was a big color one with a matrix of things.
Yes.
And on the bottom row, there, back.
Yes.
Next, not there, not quite there. There's a better picture, I think. The one with that one. So I look along the bottom row, and I'm thinking, gosh, wait a minute. I don't see how I rationally do that. You must have another wider class of possibilities that you haven't told us about, maybe.
Well, we saw that computationally, we don't make any mathematical assumptions. So we just plug in everything, no matter how realistic it is. So
even though they're not rational configurations, they're possible solutions.
Yes. So right now, if you just wanted to solve two-string tangle equations for biologically relevant solutions, use either Mariel's program or my program that only looks at certain solutions that are all related to being rational. This is sort of related to being rational because it's a sum of two rational tangles.
So I'm suspecting you have a larger class that you've not told us about, or maybe you haven't. I don't know.
We actually do want to classify rational two-string tangles, and we will be classifying, we'll be identifying them depending upon whether they're rational or generalized Montesinos.
Okay.
And generalized Montesinos we can also handle algebraically.
Uh-huh.
So my program handles all generalized Montesinos because I want to give the solution whether it's biologically relevant or not. Mariel's looks only at non-generalized Montesinos because she cared more about biological relevance.
Cool, thanks.
So what is a Montesino?
It's basically, if you were to cut here, it's a sum of tangles. It's actually supposed to be a horizontal sum, but with some twisting, you get the generalized ones. If I cut here, you can see there's a vertical sum of two. A Montesino would be a horizontal sum of two.
So rational pieces.
Yeah, some are rational tangles.
Yeah.
Not that's... Thank you. Again, thank you.